with Bob up here and Stephanie back there, and Chris has a good voice too. We can't go wrong this morning. And David may too, and I'm not aware. There are just so many reckless, extravagant, outrageous stories in the Bible, in the gospel. They are called parables, which sound so innocent. Stories about sheep and coins, little seeds and pearls and yeast. It's all pretty benign stuff on the surface. But then there's the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. By all appearances, the Pharisee would have been recognized for his prayers, for he was the obvious religious character. Nevertheless, it was the tax collector's prayer that God heard and affirmed. Then there's a parable about the workers in the vineyard, when those who arrived on the job very late got the exact same pay as the ones who showed up on time. And the parable of the prodigal son, where the no-account wine woman and song guy was forgiven, and the good mind-your-mother older brother came up short. But we'll save that one for next week. That's the grace of God at work. The lost ones, the losers get clobbered by the sheer, undeserved, extravagant love of God. And the Pharisees, who carried out the letter of the law meticulously, are righteously indignant. How could those losers, those lazy, shiftless losers, those sinners who get themselves lost and don't keep the law, end up getting everyone to rejoice when they are found? In reality, aren't we upstanding, church-going Christians? Aren't we indignant too? In Jesus' day, the word sinner was not merely a moral description, but was also a description of religious and social outcasts. To find the equivalent of that in our day, we would probably have to look at the crack dealer, the pornography peddler, the hopeless drunk, the prostitute with AIDS. Sinners were the ones the good people didn't want to have anything to do with. Yet Jesus sought them out. Jesus sought their company as if they were God's favored ones. Jesus passed up the potluck with respectable folks to cavort with the lowlifes. No wonder the Pharisees were upset. Here's Jesus hanging out with sinners, lepers, tax collectors, women of the night, not only talking with them, which was bad enough, but also eating with them in open defiance of Jewish dietary laws. Now, we often dismiss the Pharisees as self-righteous and smug, but the truth is they were the good guys of their time, the exemplary citizens, the pillars of the synagogue, the kind of people you would want your daughter to date. They kept the law. They had been taught that one should never break bread with sinners and that you are known by the company you keep. The Pharisees meant to offer a good alternative to the ways of this world, showing people it is both possible and pleasing to live according to God's will. They were not uninterested in sinners, but they believed that the best way to help them is to hold up a high standards until they're finally challenged to become the best they can be. That message appeals to people. It makes the rules clear and the rewards those who obey them, admitting the winners to the ranks of the educated, the employed, the righteous, and sending the losers to go back and try again. Then Jesus comes along and starts messing around with the system. He treats sinners like special cases and makes them think they are as important as other people. He socializes with them, which is like condoning their behavior, and thereby he robs them of their motivation to do better. Why should they buy anything from the Pharisees that Jesus is giving away for free? So why does grace, God's grace, which is supposed to make everybody feel good, sometimes sting? John Wesley, founder of Methodism, on the occasion of being kicked out of an English pulpit, once said, "There are few matters more repugnant to reasonable people than the grace of God." You've heard the attitude before. They never bought me a watch until I could tell time. Or you got the biggest piece of cake for dinner. That means I get to sit by the window the next time we go on vacation to Michigan. Or John's arm cost $500 since I wasn't stupid enough to break my arm like John. Can I have $500 for a new car? Sounds very familiar to me because I heard it from my sons. Does it sound familiar to you? The grace of God. A clergy friend of mine from some years ago was pastor to a church in Carpentersville, Illinois. This was a small church with an older membership, pretty socially conservative. One year, Nancy began a new service for bikers, motorcycle folks, after the regular Sunday morning service. Now, there are bikers and there are bikers, and this was a particularly crusty lot. Extensive tattoos, piercings in all the usual places, plus some of the unusual places, very unusual hairdos. The regular congregation became totally unglued. But Nancy continued this second service anyway, until the congregation voted her out. But I can't help but think that if Jesus had been in Carpentersville at Nancy's church, he probably would not have been at the traditional Sunday service. He would have been right there in the middle of that biker crew. That's the grace of God at work. Preacher Martin Copenhaver recalls that in the 70s, he served a church in Westport, Connecticut. It was a time before there were any homeless shelters in the area, so the church opened one of their church school rooms for people to sleep in. It started out on a very small scale with an individual here or there who needed a place to crash for the night, but before long, he said, we had up to 10 homeless men a night. Now, when you have 10 homeless men in a little church school room, you've really got something. Copenhaver said if there were people who were easy to live with, someone would have taken them in, friend or relative. I remember, he says, the time I had to tell the men not to take their boots off until after the last church meeting was over, because some of the good church folk meeting down the hall were feeling a bit queasy. The Episcopal church down the street, he said, always had the lingering aroma of incense, but we only had smelly boots. Preacher Barbara Brown Taylor observed, isn't it interesting? The way we listen to parables like the lost sheep and the lost coin and can always find some way to wind up on the sheep's end or coin's end of things instead of the shepherd. Interesting, but entirely understandable. I too like the idea of God seeking me out and gathering me up into the fold. The role of good shepherd suits Jesus very well, but me, no, I'm retired and I don't have what it takes to be a shepherd anymore, especially when I see the kind of sheep that Jesus really wants me to seek out. The outcasts are just fine where they are, cast out there somewhere. I don't really want to draw them in. I can write them a check, but I don't want them eating at my table. We'd like to think we're on the receiving end of this grace. Like the poor pooped lamb draped over the shepherd's shoulder, so full of gratitude and relief that we vow never to wander away from him again. Or where the silver coin lying somewhere in the dark corner until the good woman who will not give up sweeps us into the night and into the light. We love these stories because they're about us. But instead, Jesus says to the Pharisees, these good and well-meaning people, which one of you, having 100 sheep, Jesus does not invite them to imagine themselves as sheep, but to imagine themselves as shepherds. Which one of you, having 100 sheep? Jesus invites us and them to leave the circle of upstanding and decent folks to hang out with the lowlifes. Some of us aren't very good at that. But I think St. Andrew's Church is pretty much known for keeping Jesus' dream alive, for hanging out with people we might not ordinarily hang out with. Jesus dreams of a world where there is no hunger, a world where everybody has a decent shelter. These are dreams that only God would inspire and help us carry out to make the world a different place. When we sit here plodding through the services printed in the bulletin, it seems that life with Jesus is tame, orderly, neat, and cautious. But don't believe it. When the church is doing its job, it's been said that it is as messy as a life, active life-saving station. We have the intent and seriousness of a surgeon taking care of patients. But after that's over, we throw a party. Come to think of it, isn't that what the shepherd does when he finds the sheep? He throws a party, a big raucous party. And so the woman who finds a coin which was missing, and they celebrate. Kind of like our Stamp Mission Week here. I still remember the first day of Stamp last year when our own Reverend Ann, now Reverend Dr. Ann, arrived in her Oshkosh overalls, hammer in hand, ready for action. I'll never forget that. Everyone at Stamp works hard, gets dirty and tired and sometimes discouraged, but we return the next day to do exactly the same thing. Then what do? We celebrate on that last Friday night, not in a grand manner perhaps, but we celebrate. Just imagine for a tiny second that if we escalated that 1 week to more days during the year, imagine how many homes we could make warmer, drier, and safer if we totaled 2 weeks of outreach a year, plus continued with the Cass Community Project in Detroit. Wow! But I digress into a commercial message. I truly think from my experience that Jesus would be with us if we take on even more Stamp, more Cass Community Projects, more of all of those good things. For you know that when you work with someone you love and who loves you, you just can't get enough of it. The payoff is simply the risk and joy of working together, side by side with the crucified and risen Christ in his ministry. The payoff consists of the peace, the joy, the strength, the power, the friendship of the suffering and risen Christ, standing shoulder to shoulder with us no matter what. The joy of serving Christ. Who could ask for more? Then in Luke's gospel we read, then Jesus said there was a man who had two sons. But that comes next week with Reverend Dr. Jack Harnish. Amen.